It's election day in the United States.
I voted for Kamala Harris because she's honest, because Trump is a crook. I voted for her because I'm for a woman, I'm for change.
The most important issue for me was my country. The country that I'm living in is not the country I was born into. So I'm voting for America, and the only one who's putting America first is Donald Trump.
Every vote counts in the presidential election, but some carry more weight.
Instead of adding up the votes that the candidates get across the entire country, really what's going on are 51 separate elections.
Today is Tuesday, November 5th, and this is The Issue from VOA. I'm Scott Walterman.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
Election Day is here. Americans are casting their votes for either Donald Trump or Kamala Harris in one of the nation's most historic presidential races.
I'm definitely for, you know, Donald Trump, obviously. It's important for him to get back in office, for me, to secure our borders, to help our economy, to get back to where we were.
I think that the world that Trump wants to create is a world that is full of hatred, xenophobia, and, you know, a world where I wouldn't be free to be the person that I am. My children wouldn't be free to be the people that they are. And I think that for those reasons, we need someone like Kamala in office.
Let's start now by checking in with VOA Midwest correspondent Kane Farabaugh.
You are in the important state of Wisconsin. Tell us where you are and what you've been seeing so far.
Well, I'm here on the campus of the University of Wisconsin in Madison, which is the state capital. And there was a steady stream of voters coming into the polling location that I was at, which was at Memorial Union, which is basically like the student union on campus of the University of Wisconsin.
And it's an important state, no doubt.
One of the most critical in this election because of its status as a swing state.
VOA Midwest Bureau Chief Kane Farabaugh, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about where you are and what you're seeing.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
I'm turning now to another critical voting state where we find VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman. Hey, Steve, thanks for joining us.
Sure, it's my pleasure.
Tell us what's going on in Georgia.
From the time the polls opened at 7 a.m., there was quite a rush. People on their way to work because it's a Tuesday. It's a work day for a lot of people. And we've just been experiencing the lunch rush. We've been around to a couple of the polling stations so far. The one I'm at right now is a Hindu temple in Gwinnett County, Georgia.
Now, Gwinnett County is metropolitan Atlanta, right?
That is correct. We're northeast of Atlanta. What's unique about Gwinnett County, it is quite diverse. There's no one ethnic group that is a majority in this county. It's about 30% white, and then a sizable population of Hispanics and Koreans, South Asians as well. As the election commissioner for Gwinnett County, Zach Manifold, told me, Gwinnett County is a microcosm of America.
VOA's Steve Herman in Georgia.
It's likely to be a long night. There will be election night watch parties across the country, including the candidates' official parties.
VOA's Carolyn Fursuti is in West Palm Beach at the Palm Beach County Convention Center, where the Trump campaign will be spending election night looking at results. Carolyn, what's going on where you are?
The Trump family will be joining everyone here at the convention center along with their supporters, their volunteers, their staff members, their aides, in what they hope will be a victory party. But first, it's an election watch party to see those early returns coming in, to notice any trends, notice demographics of the voters, and if they are indeed, were indeed successful.
Any idea when Donald Trump will actually be arriving? Will it be later on when the polls are closing?
I'm sure they will be looking at the results to figure out when is the best time for him to appear here so he doesn't have to wait too long, doesn't have to chill his heels too long in a waiting area before he comes out on stage. I'm sure they'll have various people speaking to supporters like they always do to kind of warm up the crowd until we get better results. Typically, they have huge jumbotrons so that the supporters, all who are gathered here in this convention center, can see the results, and you'll hear cheers from the crowd when the results are going their way.
VOA senior correspondent Carolyn Frasutti in Palm Beach, Florida.
Here in Washington, Vice President Harris has chosen her alma mater, Howard University, as the spot for her election night party. VOA's White House Bureau Chief, Patsy Widakaswara. So thanks for joining us. Tell us what's happening there.
She chose this site specifically because of her personal and professional ties to this historically black college. This is where her views are shaped. This is where her political connections are forged. And her campaign says that her selection of Howard University also shows her commitment to diversity and inclusion. Essentially, what's going to happen tonight is what's called an election watch party. So Vice President Kamala Harris will be here, as well as Governor Tim Walz. They're going to watch the election results come in together.
Patsy, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
VOA's White House Bureau Chief, Patsy Widakaswara.
Scott, I think it's going to be more like election week instead of election night, but you never know. It just seems like with the way the votes are coming in and the mail-in ballots not being counted yet, we may have some results, but I'm thinking it may be more of a couple of days before we actually know the results. And that's the confusing part, because certain states we're looking for that are more important than others because of what is known as our electoral college system of voting, that, you know, basically means it matters more of who wins each state than necessarily the entire vote as a whole.
That's right. And it's not each state. It's really down to a half dozen or so states, because we know the pattern in some states and what to expect, but there are states that could go either way. And that's what makes it confusing. And because it's so confusing, if you're going to follow the results as they come in and try to make sense of it all, there are things you need to know about how the election is determined. To help us all understand better, we're joined by Matthew Lebo, political science professor at Canada's Western University.
Thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us.
Sure.
There's a lot of confusion about how our political system works. Can you just explain briefly the basis of how our elections, our presidential elections, are decided by what is called an electoral college? What is that?
Well, instead of adding up the votes that the candidates get across the entire country, really what's going on are 51 separate elections, one in each state and one in the District of Columbia. In 49 of those elections, whoever gets the most votes wins that state or the District of Columbia and gets all of the electoral votes. And in Nebraska and Maine, it's a little bit different, but generally the rule is it's winner take all. And there are 538 electoral votes overall, and a candidate needs 270 of them to win. The states have different number of electoral votes that depend on the size, on how many senators they have, plus how many members they have in the U.S. House of Representatives. So the smallest states and the District of Columbia have 3, and the larger states have a lot. So it used to be that New York had the most electoral votes because it had the highest population, and now it's California has the most. And so each state adds up how many votes it gets, and then it's winner take all, and we add up the number of electoral votes, and a winner is declared based on counting those votes in an official session, joint session of Congress.
The other odd thing is that even though it's a national election, the federal government doesn't run the election. Each individual state and the District of Columbia run their own elections. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, the Constitution says that elections are run at the state level. And so that part is makes things much more complicated. So states have different rules about registering to vote over the types of voting that are available. The rules are different for voting early or voting by mail, voting in person. The requirements for voting are different state by state. When they start counting votes is different state by state. So, you know, some results we're going to get on election night, and some will take days to get the final answers for. So it's very disaggregated, and that's rooted in the Constitution.
So, in other words, the person who wins can basically be the person who did not get the most votes across the nation.
Right. And that has happened four times in American history. Most recently in 2016, when Donald Trump lost by about 3 million votes but won the Electoral College. And in 2000, where George W. Bush lost by about 500,000 votes but won in the Electoral College. There are democracies in the world where the winning person doesn't get the most votes, such as, you know, Canada Prime Minister Justin Trudeau got 33% of the vote for his Liberal Party, and the Conservatives in Canada got 34%. But because of the way that the Liberal Party won seats, Trudeau became the Prime Minister. But there's really nothing else where, in a democracy, a single office is voted on directly, and the person who gets the most votes doesn't necessarily win. That's really particular to the United States.
Now, that was set up by the Founding Fathers, the people that wrote the Constitution. Why did they do that?
Well, the main goal of it seems to have been to put some kind of buffer between the votes of the people and the choice of president. That elites wanted the opportunity to step in case the general public made a poor choice, that they would have, you know, this in-between and temporary institution that would be able to choose somebody else. It also was arranged in such a way so that smaller states had a slightly outsized voice in the vote. So because every state gets two senators, you know, Wyoming gets two senators and California gets two senators, that gives a little bit more weight to states with fewer people than they really should have, just based on proportionality. And that was seen as something valuable to the framers of the Constitution.
You said it was temporary. What do you mean? Or it was supposed to be temporary.
Well, I don't mean that the Electoral College is a temporary institution. I mean that the people who will form this year's Electoral College, they will come and they will go. So, you know, after they cast their votes, they will not be the same people. And so in the 2028 election, the electors will be a new group of people. They're not a body that's permanently elected or that's elected for any kind of period of time. It's just a group that forms, cast their votes, and then, you know, they dissipate.
Right. And that's a little confusing too, because, you know, we've had this whole issue with the last election in 2020, where we heard of fake electors. What is that? How does that play into this? How do they become electors, and how do we know the real, who gets to be an elector and who is, you know, pretending right to be one, and why it matters?
So in every state, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party will come up with separate lists of electors. And if a state has 10 electoral votes, then somewhere that the Democratic Party has a list. Okay, if we win, here are our 10 electors. And the Republican Party has a list. If we win, here are our 10 electors. When the state is decided and a state certifies the election win, then it will take the list from the winning party and put them forward to be counted in the official vote in the joint session of Congress. So in 2020, there was efforts to have at the state level the list put forward by the Republicans when they had actually lost the state. So in Arizona and Georgia, there was efforts to try and get them to put forward either both lists or the Republican lists, or to say that the election was, you know, really undecided, and so neither list should go forward. So a fake elector would be someone who represents who intends to vote for the party who didn't win the state. And it should be more difficult this year than 2020 to try and put forward fake electors. There's a new congressional act to prevent that. But it really depends on the state doing its job in certifying the election and making sure that the person who actually got the most votes is certified as the winner of that state.
Yeah, you've mentioned that before, certification. And we hear a lot about certification. Explain to us what that means. What is certification?
Right. So again, the Constitution says that every state oversees its own elections. And so the certification process can be different in different states. But generally, it means that the Secretary of State within a state certifies and says, okay, this is the candidate who won the election. That will usually require that both state houses agree and that the governor agrees that on who won the election. So it can take several steps at the state level. And in states where there's divided government, perhaps if the governor is of one party and the legislature is of another party, that might have some bumps in the road. But ultimately, it's the Secretary of State certifies an election, and that tells the state which group of electors goes forward, which electoral votes are going to be counted on January 6th, 2025.
It's interesting because, as you mentioned, the states with the largest populations have the most electoral votes. And obviously, we see, the candidates focusing on what we call the swing states. And obviously, they're very crucial. Are they crucial enough to where one candidate or another has to win all of them or most of them? And is that why we see this campaigning so heavily in the states with the most delegates?
So there's probably 43 states that, based on polling and recent history, we could guess with certainty who's going to win them. And, a state like California has 54 electoral votes, and Kamala Harris is going to win California, and so she's not spending much time there, and neither is Donald Trump. But there are seven crucial battleground states. Neither candidate needs to win all of them. In 2020, Joe Biden won six of those seven states, and Harris can afford to lose three of those six. She can afford to lose Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, and she can afford to lose North Carolina, the same as Joe Biden lost it in 2020. But she needs to win Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania to get to 270 electoral votes. And it's really Pennsylvania's is the most important state this year, where it's hard to imagine Harris or Trump winning the election, getting to 270 electoral votes without winning Pennsylvania. And so with 19 electoral votes, that's why you see that those candidates just spending so much time there. And also that they're sort of similar voters in those three states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And so they're targeting the same people, and campaigning in any one of those three can sort of leak out and help in the other three states. The other two states.
So my apologies for what I'm about to do, but to make it even more complex, it's not just the state's elections. There's not just 51 elections. Each county in each state runs their own election and then reports to the state. And how this impacts an election, potentially, remember Florida in 2000, where they started recounting specific counties in the state, and then the state told the counties, we want you to recount, and some of the counties said, we're not going to do it because the secretaries of state in most states don't really have authority over the county election supervisors, right?
Absolutely. And so that's an entire another level and dimension of complication. And in Florida, it was Palm Beach County used an entirely different ballot. And they used this butterfly ballot that people found very confusing. It really required some cognitive abilities that were difficult for, one of the oldest counties in the United States. And so people would look at the left-hand side and count down a certain number of dots and press the thing. And they voted for Pat Buchanan when they intended to vote for Al Gore. And so you had really one of the most Jewish counties in the United States voted for the most right-wing candidate who had expressed admiration for Hitler. It is unbelievable that county by county, the ballots can be different. The officials are different. The process of getting, you know, the ballots counted, or the process of accepting that people have the right to vote, the way that they might look at who is registered, who has the proper identification. When ballots come in from overseas or by mail, they might be accepted or not accepted using different standards. And so it is incredibly complicated, and the courts can play a huge role in trying to set standards across counties, even within states.
I'm not sure about the actual statistical nature of this, but it would appear that Americans are not really in love with this system and would prefer to see the vote in presidential elections be calculated according to the actual number of votes and the popular vote. Would this take a constitutional amendment to ever change this? And is that something that has ever been thought about as far as changing this sort of way of calculating presidential elections?
For sure. And, you know, especially after the 2000 election, where there was a mismatch between the electoral college winner and the popular vote winner, then that was, you know, got a lot of people talking about, well, should we get rid of this system? In the last couple of cycles, though, it's clear that the electoral college was favoring the Republican Party. So in 2020, it looked like Joe Biden needed to win by 4 or 5% in order to carry the Electoral College. This year, probably Harris needs to win by at least 2 or 3 in order to win the Electoral College. So when the system is benefiting one party, then that party's not going to agree to change the system. And to change the Constitution really requires, you know, at least some part of one party and the entire other party to agree to work towards change. So, you know, an amendment to the Constitution is really unlikely. It is possible that, you know, there's this electoral college compact that would require federal legislation where states agree that they will cast their electoral college votes for whoever wins the national popular vote. And if you could get states adding up to 270 electoral votes to agree to that compact, then the electoral college system as it exists now would sort of become irrelevant, and you could get to the popular vote winner without a constitutional amendment. But again, that would require states that are predominantly Republican from agreeing to give away their advantage.
Thanks so much for the info. It's really complicated.
It's very complicated.
Matthew Lebo, political science professor at Western University.
Well, the stage is set, Lori. There's nothing to do but wait till all of the votes are counted. And you heard how confusing that process is confusing. But they know what they're doing. We've had a lot of these things.
That's true. You never know. I mean, and it has been one wild election years. You know, first it was Joe Biden running against Trump, and then he bowed out, and you know, everything changed. And it seems like nothing could have been planned. Of course, some years we know the results almost either that night, or other times it's taken a whole week before we know.
So. Well, if you go back to 2000, that was an extended, it was a month. All right.
Well,
we'll find out.
We'll see what happens. Yep. You've been listening to The Issue from the Voice of America.
On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for being with us.
Follow The Issue on X and Facebook at VOA The Issue. And for news 24/7 on our website, voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Lori London. We will talk to you tomorrow.